The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your host for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo.
Welcome to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo. On today's show, my guest is Josh Levine, who is a principal at Great Mondays, a consulting design firm, as well as the author of Great Mondays, a book on how to change your corporate culture. In this week's tech news, Uber announced that they're going to allow drivers to be notified that pets will be joining the ride for a small surcharge. And they will also be adding a feature where a potential ride-along will also know that a pet is in the car. Twitter admitted to using two-factor phone numbers in their targeted emails. This is very similar to what Facebook was doing. It is not illegal, but they're getting a lot of heat because basically they asked users to put their phone number in case they got locked out of their account and using their phone number to unlock the account, but then using those phone numbers to solicit ads for you. And perhaps a sign of a either weakening economy or loss of strength in the tech world, there's rumblings at Uber from their employees that their coffee is getting weaker and their other perks are vanishing fast. Now, coming out of the tech industry, when high-flying companies used to offer a lot of perks and when they start to scale back, that usually is a sign of some type of impending recession, layoff, slowdown. I mean, there's a lot of arguments about Uber in terms of their financial performance. But those are just signs. Remember Toys R Us? They went bankrupt a little while back, and they came back through a new parent company who bought them in bankruptcy. They announced that they're going to relaunch their website with Target being their back end. So when you go to the new Toys R Us site and as you're buying toys online, just know that the fulfillment of that is happening through Target. And that's actually quite a long 20-year journey from when Target used to use Amazon for the same thing. In my final news story, Google's taking a lot of heat that they have been attracting more samples for their facial recognition engine. So in other words, they want more people's faces, that they've been attracting those, especially with darker skin, because there isn't enough for what we call in artificial intelligence and machine learning a large enough sample size. And how they did this is they offered $5 gift cards at universities and to homeless people in order to get more darker skin faces into their database. The Google spokesperson did acknowledge that it's happening, and they said that they will be changing their methods in gathering this data. And I'm sure we'll hear more about this, and that's the tech news of the week. Welcome back to the show. Once again, I'm joined with Josh Levine, who's a principal of Great Mondays and the founder of Culture Lab X, a nonprofit. He's the executive director as well. Welcome back, Josh.
Thank you so much.
So, Josh, it's so great to have you on the show today. I wanted to talk both about Great Mondays, your company, and Great Mondays, your book. But before we begin, I want to talk about your background. How did you even get started in any of this?
Yeah, culture is kind of these days it seems like an assumption that it's a good conversation, but it wasn't when I started. I started about 10 years ago really digging into company culture, but it's not like I studied HR or studied organizational development. I was actually a designer, a graphic designer. And so I moved out to the Bay Area, to San Francisco to study design. And then I got hired by a brand strategy firm. Did a lot of brand strategy, did a lot of coaching with executives, and all of these brand promises that we were helping them make, it occurred to me that like we couldn't help them actually get to deliver on those brand promises. And so when I had a career crisis, this crisis of my soul. Wanted to think about what I wanted to do with my life, and I saw the opportunity to actually help organizations on the inside articulate that brand story to the people who work there, so it could be as compelling to as it would be to customers. And that's how I started to think. I didn't even know to call it culture back then.
Okay,
it was more like something internal branding or something. And as when I figured out it was culture, and that's what people would call it, I kind of stepped out into the world and I said, ta-da, I'm not in brand anymore. I'm now a culture guy. And everybody went, what? What is that? And nobody understood it. And so for me, it took 5 or 6 years before it really started to become something that was important. And luckily, I'm stubborn / tenacious uh-huh. enough that I kind of stuck with it. I believed in it. And that's how we got to kind of where we are today is just learning and thinking deeply about how to help employees and contractors and executives and managers make better business decisions. What is it we can provide for them? How do they feel, you know, how can they become part of the company and feel deeply invested in it and highly engaged? Called a business buzzword, right? Employee engagement. That's the kind of the framework that we think about.
No, that's fascinating. So as a reminder, some people heard my story before. I actually studied organizational behavior, organizational development at the University of California, Davis, my undergraduate. And how I've applied that knowledge is in the companies I've worked for, each one has a very unique culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I can talk about Wells Fargo before the bad news. Wells Fargo pre-First Interstate merger in the 90s. In the book Good to Great, it was listed as a level 5 example with Carl Reichardt to Paul Hazen, the two executives at the time, your predecessor and successor. And then my favorite company to have worked for was Cisco Systems, who just this week as we record was announced as the number one place to work in America or in the world, top place to work. And we can talk about a little bit later in the show, but it's the culture. So I do deals, right? I negotiate and now I work with startups and I work with large companies. We can talk about in a microcosm of technology companies, how each one has a culture. So we can talk about how, and these are all stereotypes and what people have written about.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about Amazon. Amazon has a very militaristic command and control structure with Bezos at the top. We can talk about a company I've done a lot of work with, Oracle, and I'll say this tongue-in-cheek because I've done negotiations with them. Larry Ellison and Safra Catz, CEO and CFO, or now actually Larry is Chief Development Officer, Safra's CEO. It's like emperor and empress, right? and you've got fiefdoms.
Yep.
I'm going to be very careful. And then you talk about Facebook, and they have all these diagrams showing that the culture of Facebook, it's really like this web of intermeshed beings, and there's no clear decision tree. I mean, you think Mark's in there somewhere.
Right.
But, and you read about it. So you think about all this culture. I don't know if, I mean, I grew up with this. I don't know if employees and leadership actually think about the culture actively until they talk to somebody like you.
I think that's exactly right. And that's part of my mission in the world is to say, look, this isn't just something that happens to you. This is something that you can actually proactively and creatively manage. That is the new kind of fact of 21st century business. This needs to be something we need to take very seriously. And it is culture is such a key competitive advantage. I would even argue the only sustainable competitive advantage because everything else can be stolen and copied. And like you said, each organization has its own culture. You can't just go, oh, I love Zappos. I'm going to do exactly what they did. Or I just read Laszlo Bloch's book about Google culture. I'm going to do exactly that. It won't work. Even if you could, it won't work.
Right.
And that to me is that's when we're talking about like it's not about IP law. It's not about you know, the kind of the best innovation. It's about an environment and an ecosystem where people learn how to work together well and make great decisions.
Well, Josh, it's a great start to the show. I'm so happy you're here because I think it's a really engaging content. And we'll definitely be talking about your book, Great Mondays, as soon as we get back. If you have any questions or comments about what we're talking about today with Josh Levine of Great Mondays, email us at info@svn.biz or go to greatmondays.com and we'll be right back. The NTT Open Innovation Contest 10.0 is now open for submissions. Interested startups should definitely check this out. Your company could win up to $100,000 of funding and win a trip to Tokyo to get shepherded by NTT Data's ecosystem. Go to oi.nttdata.com or svn.biz for more information.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Hey, insiders. Welcome back to the show. Once again, I have Josh Levine, who's the principal of Great Mondays, a culture strategy consulting firm, and the author of the book Great Mondays. Welcome back, Josh.
Thank you.
So, Josh, coming from you, an expert in this subject, what is culture?
Yeah, it's a good question. A lot of people have a real hard time answering it. They think it's a fuzzy thing. They think it's, ping pong and pizza, in the afternoon break. But ultimately, culture is the cause and effect of every decision that we make. It is a system. It is an input and an output, and it is contagious, which I think is why it's so insidious. In its when it's bad and so powerful when it's good.
Mm-hmm.
That is ultimately the what we're looking for is like, what are the inputs and outputs of kind of each decision that we make? And so then the question becomes, okay, if it's everything, then what? Like, how do you even start to do something about it?
So let's get that into a little bit further. What is the approach?
So I've outlined in my book six components, and it's a self-reinforcing system. And the first three components, purpose, values, and behaviors, they are essentially how we help executive teams define what kind of culture they want. Purpose is your why. Purpose is the top of the mountain. Purpose is why you get up in the morning, why I should join this business, why am I working so hard? Values are our how. Those are the three to five most important things that we're working on right now as an organization, stretching towards. That's how we're going to get to the top of the mountain. I'm going to, as the leader, as an executive, I'm going to say, hey, here are the boundaries we work on. We work in between. And behaviors are essentially the center point. That's the output. That is what we're hoping for. So that's the behaviors are the choices that we make. So if you stretch a line between from values to purpose, you're really going to start to see that's the kind of behaviors that we want. Now, the second three components of the six, four, five, and six are recognition, rituals, and cues.
Hmm.
And these are all about activating that culture. So just because you've defined your purpose and you put it up on your wall and you have your values and you list it on the back of your key card doesn't mean it's actually going to happen. We have to create an incentivization system that enables people, that encourages people, that rewards people for actually doing the things that we decide that, hopefully making the kind of decisions that we want them to make. And so when we think about recognition and rewards, that's something that organizations have done since the first sales organization existed, right? Like that's what they want to do is they want to reward sales. But my argument is you've been doing it wrong the whole time. You actually don't want to only incentivize the outputs. You want to talk about how do you get more people to make values-driven decisions. Values-driven decisions, not just about the outputs. Because as you mentioned, Wells Fargo and the scandal, that incentive, that was, hey, cross-sale as much as possible, and that's what we're going to pay you for. That's what we're going to reward you for. Well, guess what? Those people cheated. What we need to do is have a realignment inside of organizations and say, hey, look, managers, we need to actually start recognizing and rewarding values-driven behaviors.
Well, you're making such excellent points because I worked at Wells. I left 20 years ago, right? And what happened with the situation, the scandal that everyone knows about, the cross-selling of products that nobody ever asked for, they acquired, back to the shotgun weddings of the 2008 financial crisis, they acquired a former what we call correspondent banking partnership. So they acquired Wachovia, which was an equally sized bank from the East Coast. And that culture came from them. So when you do an M&A, I did a lot of M&A work in my career, large and small. The biggest part, back to your point about culture, is that when you have to acquire or merge with somebody, and this was government mandated, It's like getting married.
Mm.
So if you're going to adopt half your company with a certain sales culture and then everyone thinks, oh, this is great, the revenues are great, that's where you get misalignment. So back to the Cisco example in the earlier segment, congratulations again as an alumni. They won for the first time best place to work in the entire world. There's a number of factors into that. Back in the back of the cards when I used to be an employee, they had all of our values on it. But not just written. We actually – and this is pre.com days, so there's some things going on there. You have to live by example. So one of the key attributes we had was not being cheap but being frugal. So the company culture, we could not fly business class, right? And that was permeated throughout all the organization. If an executive wanted to fly business class, they'd have to do it on their own or through points or whatever. That's still in effect to this day. So now you think about what's happening in the marketplace today. I mean, back to why did Cisco make number one place to work? Maybe. Google, Facebook, Microsoft, all these companies are in the news for, you know, arguably questionable activities on the Facebook and Google side. A lot of negative press on a surveillance economy and what are they doing with your personal data. And you see employees being very jaded there right now. And I think that goes back to really understanding what you said, like purpose, values, behaviors. What are the core of the people in the organization and the output on recognition, rituals, and cues?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And so recognition is how we actually make sure people understand that this is what success looks like. Now, that's not the only piece of the puzzle. We've got rituals. So rituals are actually how we build and strengthen the synapses of culture. Those are relationships. So the problem with most organizations and a lot of the questions I get is, how do I scale my culture? And so what happens is you actually get the relationships start to degrade once you scale past 50 people if you're talking about startups. Because what happens is you only have so many relationships that you can hold in your mind. So when you get these different barriers that are wrecked, literally the cubicle walls to the different floors, to the different departments, to the different offices and cities, that's going to impede those relationships. So an organization needs to actually be proactive about creating rituals that help people connect.
Well, that was a question I had for you, because you just brought up startups of organizations under 50 people. How do you turn around the Titanic, these big, big organizations? Is it possible, or is it something you focus on, or you're kind of like writing it off?
It is possible. It just takes a lot of time and sustained effort. It needs to be persistent and consistent. And the problem with most organizations is not that they can't do it. It's just that they lose their attention, right? They're like, oh, what's the next thing? And so what we try to do is we know we can't make an effect at the grand scale, we actually work with individual departments or business units and say, we're going to help you and start to move this particular, we're going to make an immediate shift here. And then we can talk about if we're successful and people go, oh, what's happening over there? That's awesome. Then we can say, oh, I'm so glad you asked. Let's also work for you. And that's really, we start, you know, individual managers, individual departments.
Yeah, it sounds daunting.
That's why I'm in business.
I mean, I've worked with very large organizations, and now I'm doing lots of startup work. So what you're talking about really resonates, and I can kind of tell where some organizations, for them to make a leap or a change, it's a leap of faith.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's why a lot of companies don't last very long. So once again, you're listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Kuss, special guest Josh Levine, who's a principal at Great Mondays, a culture consulting firm, as well as the author of the book Great Mondays. And when we get back, we'll be talking about his book and how you can apply it to your organizations. So don't go away. If you have any questions or comments, email us at info@svn.biz, and we'll be right back. The NTT Open Innovation Contest 10.0 is now open for submissions. Interested startups should definitely check this out. Your company could win up to $100,000 of funding and win a trip to Tokyo to get shepherded by NTT Data's ecosystem. Go to oi.nttdata.com or svn.biz for more information.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Kuss.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, I'm joined with Josh Levine, the founder and principal of Great Mondays, a culture strategy design consulting firm, and the author of his book, Great Mondays. So for this week's Cyber Tip, I have just spoken at a cyber crime conference with Elvis Chan, who's the senior supervisory field agent for the FBI, and made me think to remind everyone about multi-factor authentication. So multi-factor authentication, or MFA, is like when you have to put your password into your bank account, and then it texts you a secondary PIN number, or you get an email, and people think that that's the next great thing in securing your personal information. Well, the FBI just issued a statement that said cyber criminals are getting very smart in how to circumvent MFA. I don't have too much time to talk about it today, but I'll tell you that the two main ways of doing that is social engineering or targeting web code. Now, web code is when there's flaws in the website you're visiting, so perhaps a bank, perhaps a retailer, and they're taking certain amounts of information from that. Or in social engineering, so like for instance, you need to give up your street you lived on or the first school you attended. Well, you probably posted a photo of that on Facebook, and so they can probably figure that out. My advice on the information you need is to always make it up, and that's the Cyber Tip of the Week. Welcome back to the show. Once again, I have Josh Levine, principal of Great Mondays, the consulting firm, as well as the author of Great Mondays, the book. Welcome back, Josh.
Thank you.
So in our first segments, we talked about Josh's background, how he didn't start off thinking he was going to be a culture expert, but how that led to his passion in helping organizations understand their culture and what to do with it. So in the last segment, we talked about the six components that he lives by: purpose, values, behaviors, and that leads to recognition, rituals, and cues. And what I really want to call out, because I've actually read the book, is that it's very practical in that anyone looking at how to adapt their culture, there are actually worksheets and exercises and examples to really help you through that. So I wanted to talk to you, Josh, more about how to apply the book. But first, how did the book get started?
Well, I mean, it's all part of kind of my master plan, my scheme to really help advance this idea of culture in the business world. And I grew up under my first mentor, my first boss, wrote a lot of books, brand books, and I felt it was a very powerful tool for not only spreading a message, but also building a business. And so it really helped me focus my message and pull together the kind of stories that I think the world needs to understand in order to really comprehend, to grok why culture is so important. And so it was a labor of love. It was arduous, took a long time, but it's something I'm super proud of, and it's been really doing really well.
Yeah, well, what I really like about the book is the ability to apply the examples you have. I want to bring it back, because you talked about your first boss. I want to bring it back a little bit earlier, because what I really liked, and I don't want to give the book away, but in the intro, you had your first example about a relative named Sam. So I wanted you to talk about that story.
Yeah. So when I was growing up, I grew up with the kind of Levine family lore. And the Levine family lore was that my father was actually a very talented musician, still is. And in high school, he played all sorts of instruments, and he actually auditioned for and got accepted into North America's most prestigious music school, Juilliard.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? Like, how could you, like, that's an incredible opportunity. I couldn't even imagine my own, you know, someone that I know, let alone my own son, doing that. But what happened was he wasn't allowed to go. He wasn't allowed to go to pursue his passion because his father, who grew up through the Depression, said you only have three options. You can be a doctor, a lawyer, or a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant. And he wasn't really smart enough to be either the first two. So he went to an accounting school. And to me, that really influenced a lot of how I see the world, which is that I think we now no longer have to choose one of these three, the three most stable careers. We have the opportunity to choose something we love to do, something that we, you know, we can, there's so many opportunities to make money, so many different ways, not all of them fulfilling, but we don't have to go to work in the factory. We can do other things. And so to me, when I think about the world that we're in and the opportunities that we have, it would be a complete just like dishonoring kind of the opportunities, the evolution of capitalism has brought us to this moment of we can actually choose to do work that we not only, you know, don't dislike, but actually love. And that, to me, that's where my kind of the origin story of why I started to think about culture in this way really kind of came to be. How can I help more people actually find and believe that they can – life's too short to choose the kind of work that is just not satisfying.
This is such a great story, and I'm glad you're sharing it, because when I read it, here's our similarity. So my father, who just passed away this summer, growing up in China, he was a very talented violinist. He had a German-Italian-Jewish violin instructor, and he celebrates that he got beaten a lot when he was learning how to play. This is in China, right?
Yeah, sure.
So when they left communist China during the change, they got into Hong Kong, and my dad got to play first chair in the Hong Kong orchestra.
Whoa.
And that was his passion. He played at our church. He played at my wedding. He was an excellent violinist. And he said, Keith, and he became an accountant. So
that's amazing.
So applying your story with your dad, my dad coming from China, Hong Kong to the United States, going to his MBA at Berkeley, he had the decision of, am I going to become a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant? And he actually had that plan for me as well. And I think it was difficult being Chinese American. And I always talk about my two cultures because 100% American and 100% Chinese.
Yeah.
It's this liberation, because I studied organizational behavior, it's this liberation knowing that, especially now, not just in America but in the world, you can have all these options and opportunities to do what you're really passionate about. When I started my consulting firm 4 years ago, leaving corporate after 20 plus years, that was the whole idea I had in my mind. And so your passion around culture, writing your book, it was just so resonating to me because I had the exact same upbringing.
And so you're the Chinese American version of Josh.
Exactly. But it took me longer to come to the epiphany to go do my own thing.
Well, then hopefully it'll take, you know, my children and their peers even shorter, right? Like they can find that they can, or raising them already to say, what is it that you enjoy doing? What do you want to go into? What are you passionate about? And I think that dialogue is becoming more prevalent, which is exciting.
And that's really what's inside your book.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I try to talk a lot about how to not only that it's possible to find the kind of work that you want, but within your organization, how can you actually elevate that organization to be some place that people enjoy working? They want to come to work. They want to actually do that kind of work. They're not forced to do it. And that is that's really the crux. Even if you don't buy the book, that's what you got. That's the takeaway, right? Like that's the primary takeaway, is that it's possible. It is possible to not only work for someplace that is an amazing place, but to actually influence and change the kind of organization, change the organization into something, some kind of place that you want to be.
Yeah, and I think I should bring up, you can buy the book. It's on Amazon.com. Great,
that's right. You should.
Great Money is by Josh Levine. If you hang out to the end of the segment and the end of the overall show, we'll give you an opportunity to actually win the book. So, Josh, what are some other key takeaways from the book that you want to impart?
Well, one of the most important pieces that is, I think, really critical for folks to understand, and I think most have experienced some form of this, is the idea of cues. And the cues, which is the sixth component of culture, is really how leaders, managers, and organization can remind people about their purpose and values, about what they're trying to do. So the most common cue that pretty much everybody, I'm sure, that's listening to your program or has been in, you know, corporate headquarters has seen is that mission statement or that vision statement on the wall. So that's a cue that helps us remember why we're coming to work, but we don't have to stop there. There's so many ways to remind people to remember that. Even though you get bogged down in the quarter end reports and the emails and the meetings, it's like, remind me, why am I here? What am I doing? So there's two kinds of cues, behavioral and visual. And so when we think about behavioral, are you the kind of leader that's going to stand up and talk about the origin story of the company? Are you the kind of leader that's going to remind people, you know, that you need to go out and meet someone new in another department? Are you the kind of manager who's going to bring people together and actually get them to connect in order to build trust and work better together? And so we need to fill in all the entirety of our business lives with these ideas of not just kind of the organizational purpose, but personal purpose, our personal values, and other ways that we're thinking about how do we want to grow as a individual? How do we want to grow as a business? How do we want to grow as a department? These are all things that we need to remember. And even though you set it up front, it's so important to keep reminding people. You can get really creative with it. I think one opportunity that I have seen wasted time and time again are the names of conference rooms. Here in the Bay Area, I'm sure you've seen them. It's usually like the name of the neighborhood or a popular landmark or something random, typefaces. You know, I was at a digital consultancy. But why not use those as storytelling devices? Moments where you can say, hey, the name of this room is the Black Forest, which is where the company started. You know, the Black Forest in Germany, that's where Frog Design started.
Oh, wow.
And so they think about, okay, oh, it's interesting. I didn't realize that. And you have an opportunity to tell kind of story. So those are the kinds of simple, easy, inexpensive ways to actually connect with other people.
Well, Josh, that's a great suggestion because I've named a lot of conference rooms myself, so we should talk about that further. So once again, you're listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo with Josh Levine. Once again, you're listening to Keith Koo, Silicon Valley Insider with Josh Levine, author of Great Mondays. If you want to learn how to win a copy of his book, stay tuned for The Pivot, where we'll be talking about culture stories. We'll tell you how you have a chance to win. So if you have any questions or comments, email us at info@svn.biz and we'll be right back. The NTT Open Innovation Contest 10.0 is now open for submissions. Interested startups should definitely check this out. Your company could win up to $100,000 of funding and win a trip to Tokyo to get shepherded by NTT Data's ecosystem. Go to oi.nttdata.com or svn.biz for more information.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm Keith Koo. Once again, I'm joined with Josh Levine, who is a principal at Great Mondays, a culture design consultancy firm, as well as the author of the book Great Mondays, which is teaching organizations how they can adapt their culture. Welcome back, Josh.
Thank you.
So early in the show, we talked all about Josh's story, his passion around helping companies maintain or adapt their culture. And we also talked about if you waited till the end of the show, you can learn how to win a book. So in order to win Josh's book, Great Mondays, email us at info@svn.biz with your story about what aspect of your organization's culture you'd like to change. Josh and I will be the sole judges of that, and then we will announce the winner, and then we will send you the book.
I'll even sign it for you.
And Josh will even sign it for you. So Josh, what are some of the stories of culture, good or bad, that you've heard of?
You know, there's one kind of corporate lore, brand lore here in the Bay Area that I think is really powerful, and that's the story of Blue Bottle Coffee. Mm-hmm. So Blue Bottle Coffee started out as kind of this small hipster anti-Starbucks, anti-Pete's brand,
okay,
right? Like, so Starbucks was get your coffee as fast as possible. Blue Bottle is as slow as possible. So
yes.
I love that from the brand aspect of it. So very successful, starting to scale rapidly. And one of the ways that if you follow the coffee industry kind of playbook,
okay,
one of the ways that you grow your business is by selling beans in bulk to mm-hmm. other cafes and other outlets. So you're selling more product in more places.
And you over roast them to preserve them longer.
You over roast them to preserve them. All that stuff. What happened is that flavor and that taste and that quality, even that experience that Blue Bottle built its brand on, did not come through in any capacity. They even tried to send out trainers to teach the baristas at the different cafes, and they could not get the quality right. And because it was such a critical part of the business, it was a really tough time for them. They were like, well, we've got the quality to deal with on one hand, but we've got the revenues that we're trying to grow on the other. As a matter of fact, they got venture funding at that right at that moment. Mm. One of their values, they have three values. One of their values is deliciousness. And what the VP of HR at the time told me was that he went and took that to the leadership team. And he said, look, if this is one of our values, if this is how we're going to continue to differentiate ourselves, we need to take the hit and sacrifice half of our revenue in order to preserve the quality of our brand. The deliciousness is one of the only one of three things that we believe deeply in. And if we really, really believe in that corporate value, this is the right thing to do. And they made that hard business decision. And the good news is they actually were able to scale in a different way. They didn't go by the best practices mm-hmm. of the coffee business. They didn't try to Starbucks the heck out of it. They scaled, and then they actually, the founders and the investors, had a successful exit. They're now then sold to Nestle just a few years ago. And they continue to do, you know, actually pretty good coffee, even at their scale, but it's all highly controlled. And they know, everybody just knows that part of that process is that deliciousness, and we've got to preserve that at any cost.
That's interesting. So they did scale, though.
They did.
I wonder how they get the dollop of butter in that.
In that, yeah, exactly. Well, I my now question is, like, are we going to start seeing the Blue Bottle brand on the little instant coffee K-Cups or whatever it is,
Nestle, yeah.
Right? Like,
I saw that, yeah.
You sell the brand, so that's the question that I have, right? Like, you've got Starbucks, like, Frappuccino coffee in the fridge, coffee ice cream. So is that what Nestle's going to do? We'll have to see.
You would totally dilute the brand if you did that.
Of course, but that's how they do it. So
the only other story similar many years ago, and again, I'm intolerant to alcohol. I can't drink it. But Guinness, in order to keep the head on the beer, put CO2 cartridges in the can.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And so that was an extra expense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the analogy I can think of.
That's right. Exactly. Right.
So Josh, just with the minute we have left, what are some thoughts for people to encourage them to really actively think about culture for the organization?
You can't steal it from anywhere else. You can learn lots of different things by visiting other organizations, reading my book, reading other culture books. But what you have to understand is that you have to be creative in imagining what your own culture needs to be. You have to use those exercises that I outline and say, what is your purpose? What are your values? And even if you aren't the CEO, you can do it for your own business unit, your own team of five even, or even yourself. I misquote Gandhi in the book and I say, be the culture change you want to see in the world. And so that's what this is all about, is I want to actually change how things are. So I need to change how I am. And you don't need to wait for the permission from on top.
Well, with that, Josh, thanks again for being on today's show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
As a reminder, if you want to win a copy of his book, please email us at info@svn.biz with your story about what aspect of the culture you'd like to change in your organization. To find out more about Josh, go to his website, greatmondays.com. Lots of free resources on culture, and you can find out more about his book there. Always know that you're able to download our podcast to listen to any of the past shows. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at info@svn.biz, and we'll see you next week. The NTT Open Innovation Contest 10.0 is now open for submissions. Interested startups should definitely check this out. Your company could win up to $100,000 of funding and win a trip to Tokyo to get shepherded by NTT Data's ecosystem. Go to oi.nttdata.com or svn.biz for more information.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. For questions or comments on today's program, or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.